Mr. Bell, Real 2. We were talking about your time with on the HMS Raleigh shore station at Tor Point in Cornwall from 1941, August on. And we were just looking at sort of daily routine and sort of the routine of training. What other training? You've mentioned the drill, foot drill and gunnery and rifle training. Yes. What about, so you mentioned seamanship as well. What about...
Seamanship, yes. Knots and splices was one I remember, because I could never climb the proper knots. But you had to learn them and you had to pass the time on them.
What sort of things, how detailed did they go into knots and splices?
They were pretty thorough, because your life depended on you later. This chief petty officer told you, for instance, you know, that you had to do a job properly because your life might depend on it. And he was right, because later I did find out that, you know, he was right. He was absolutely right.
Was it rope and cabling, or was it just rope, or was it...
It was rope. It was always used rope, yes. And wires, hoses, you know, hoses, you had to use hoses as well. You hated hoses because of the steel used to stick out, you know, from the horses, and used to rip your hands apart, you know. But you weren't allowed to wear jewellery, rings and things like that when you were doing a job, you know, because that could rip your finger off, you know. And that was one. Another thing I remember, you had to go up the mast, you know, the mast at the side of the parade ground, you had to go up there, and you had to go up the rattlings, you know, at the side of the mast. And when you got to there, there was two toilet seat openings, you know, round the mast. And you had to go up one side, round the mast, and down the other. That was hell, you know. Before that, many years standing, you know, I didn't like that at all.
Were you scared of heights, or?
Yes, I was scared of heights. I was never fond of heights at all. Not even walking. I didn't like heights, you know.
But you managed it. How did you do it? Because it's quite...
Still, you have to get up there and don't fear it, for God's sake, you know. And you got up there and did it. But when you're going around the mast, you know, and going down, you're looking... You're told not to look down, you know, if you could. But I did. I looked down and I saw the water. I thought, 90 feet below you, it's a bit long drop back, you know. And...
Did you have to do it? I mean, in the old days, you had to do it almost once a day or weekly. Did you have to do it often, or was it just a one-off?
I don't remember doing it more than once or twice. I don't remember that. So I would have remembered if I had to do it again.
What about other seamanship things?
Seamanship was fastening your anchor, you know, anchoring your ship, you know, and mending cables as well, you know, you had to do cable mending as well, and knots came into that as well. So all that had seamanship was a peculiar.
Did you do any actual work with small boats and things, you know, I mean,
yes,
in the water?
Yes, you had to do wheeler, you had to do, you're turning your wheeler as well, you know, that wheeler's there, and you had to do, you turn the wheelers, you know, call them wheelers, pulling in there. Oh, yes.
And did you take to all this?
Oh, yes, I did. I'm absolutely, I did. Because I'd never done anything like it before. I'd never done anything. The only time I'd ever been anywhere near water was at the old mill at Lumley where the river comes round, you know, the River Wear came round. One lad said to me one day, when I was just about 8 years old, he said to me one day, come on, get on my back and I'll take you over the river. And he swam over the river and tipped me off in the middle. I don't forget that. That turned me against water, you know. I still don't like water now.
Well, did they teach you to swim while you were at HMS Raleigh?
No. I don't remember being taught to swim. They must have done. They must have taught us to swim. But I don't remember. I don't remember ever being, because I didn't like it, you see.
And what about theoretical seamanship? This is a, you know, sort of boxing the compass, navigation, just sort of theoretical side. Did you do any of that?
Well, we did not navigation. What was the term called? Not navigation at sea. Charts. They taught you some of that. Yes, I saw it. Actually, you know, the seamanship, you know, the whole course, you know, was confined to 9 weeks. And in peacetime, it was 9 months. It was 9 weeks. We got through it. And some were put back in course, some were put back to fill it, you know. I think we had 3 who filled it and had to do another whole session in 9 weeks again, you know, had to do the whole lot again. And whilst I did that, I came out with flying colours. I must have been towards the top of the class, you know, because of events that happened later, I will tell you. When we finished our training at Rally...
Anything else about your training at Rally? Any other aspects? So you got seamanship, gunnery. You didn't have any introduction to ASDIC or radar or wireless signalling or anything?
Nothing like that. No, none of the ranks like that, no.
This was just basic training?
You just trained to be a seaman, that was it. And other lads trained to be stokers and things like that, you see. But yeah, it's seamanship. That was all ABs. We're going to be ordinary seamen and then ABs after that, right? That was it. That was because my brother, I found midship in here. My brother used to write to me letters, you know, and I used to write to him. The Reverend T.D. Bell, B.A. He used to write to me, A.B.G. Bell, S.D. That was funny, really. It was funny. I think I should remember that. You know, you should remember that.
Did you get homesick at all?
Well, I did the first. The first training was, you became homesick. And all, I think most of the lads became homesick, you know. And that was when the faculty officer came in and settled you down. He was very, very good guy, you know. He was a very good man indeed. And of course, we used to get shore leave, you know, and go down and have a drink in the pubs. And I didn't drink then, of course, at all. I didn't drink at all. I never drank at all until I was well out in the Navy. And I never played card games, and I never played things that sort of thing. I was a fish out of water in many ways.
So what did you do for recreation?
Read. I read a lot. Read from magazines, you know, of course, all kinds of things. And, of course, about the sea as well, you know, I was dead keen.
And what about sport at Rally?
I played football at Rally, for Fortop, you know, Fortop. I was in the team for Fortop. I was a red winger, a little red winger. I became a goalkeeper later, but I was a sportsman all the time, you see. And even though I said myself, I was fairly good at it, you know. I was fairly accepted. I was accepted as a good footballer, in those days.
You meant. Now, what? Well, anything else before we leave it? You were there about 9 weeks, you reckon? So that would be till October.
Well, from the August, that's right. No, we went right to Christmas actually. No, I left just before Christmas. I left for Drake, you see, as an ordinary seaman, as a fully trained ordinary seaman, right?
So you qualified as ordinary seaman.
That was your first rank, ordinary seaman. Yes. And we all qualified as ordinary seamen, except for 3 that were put back.
Now, you were then sent?
I was then sent to... I was supposed to send HMS Drake, but of course we got leave before we went to Drake, see, and then reported back to Drake, which was the barracks in Plymouth then.
So Drake Barracks, well, it's known
HMS
as...
HMS Drake was the barrack in Plymouth, yes. That was the division, you see.
And what happened there? That was so that would be January, would it, or just into January or December?
Yes, it was Christmas, just about Christmas time, because we got Christmas leave, and I remember coming into Durham, you know, on a train. Things that must remain in my memory. I got Christmas leave, you see, and I came to Durham, and I also remember coming in at midnight into Durham, and Durham Cathedral, you know, is a beautiful sight. And I remember the moon shining on Durham Cathedral, you know, as I came over that viaduct. And I had the window down and looked at the viaduct. Of course, that was illegal then, you see, your light came out, you know. But when I put the window down, the light went out. I was able to see the cathedral. And I was very chuffed at that. Very chuffed at seeing the cathedral. I said, I'm home.
Now, what happened when he got to HMS Drake then? Well, the barracks.
Now, before I got to HMS Drake, I'd been single out here for ASDIC training. They said, they gave me a test, you know, and they said, oh, well, the intelligence test, they called it. And I came through that test. And they said, here's a man here for some meditation training, obviously. So.
Now, do you remember what sort of intelligence test they had? Because we're quite interested. Do you remember what it consisted of?
The intelligence test, you know, I twice was tested for intelligence test, and one was when I went to life, and the other was when I was commissioned. So that they were both the same tests, you know. And,
do you remember what sort of thing it was?
Oh, now this is rusty now. 60 years ago, you know.
Oh, okay, don't worry too much.
I know, yes. But, I'm just trying to realize that, I can't remember.
And where were you to do the ASDIC training course? Was that at Drake or where?
I was supposed to go to HMS Nimrod. And you know where that is? Campbelltown, Mullaghkintyre. And I was allocated to Campbelltown. There were two ASDIC training bases, one at Campbelltown and one at Dunoon.
So you never actually went to HMS Drake?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I went straight up on by train to Campbelltown. Campbelltown was godforsaken. Campbelltown. Never mind. We got there.
And that was so HMS Campbelltown?
No.
HMS Nimrod.
Nimrod.
That's right. Yes. Sorry, I'm getting confused.
One, Australia was the other.
And what was the setup there on the Nimrod? What sort of accommodation did you have there, or was it just huts again?
Oh yes, we did huts. No. We were the training school was in the grammar school at Nimrod, and I think we were billeted out, you know, in various places there, billeted out in houses and that sort.
Do you remember what the billets were like?
Oh, I can't remember. No, not really. No. This is very vague. I can't remember that. But
now, how did they start you with ASDIC training then?
ASDIC training was first of all, you were tested for sound, for hearing. Your hearing was very important because you had to transmit sound beams and get the echo back and compare with when you send out, you know. So it was very good, as it were. It was very thorough. And there again, they were chief at the officers again doing it. You know, they were very, very good. I thought the ASDIC training was absolutely excellent.
Tell me about that. How did they go on? They gave you the test. What was next?
And you were sent into a class then, and you were tested at picking out various things and hearing, you know. You were instructed in what to listen for and that sort of thing. And the underwater sounds were tremendous when you think of it, you know. But you had to. During the course, you were gradually trained how to pick out the various sounds that underlap. For instance, you're able to pick out dolphins, you know, and things like this, underwater sounds like this, that could confuse you, see, when you were detecting U-boats, you know, which, you know, U-boat walls were tight at that time, and therefore, and you had, there was one place in the grammar school grounds where it was a double like a bus. And you were trained to go and sit in the bus, you know, and do these ASDICs. You were trained to do the ASDICs yourself, you see. And the officers were sitting above, and they detected, they told you how you were doing, you know. Or you've got that U-boat you hear, or you've trapped it or you haven't, and so forth, you see. And it's very, very thorough.
Now, what about the actual equipment? What did it look like and how did it work?
Now, the equipment was, one set was for trawlers. You know, ASDIC trawlers, and the other one was for corvettes and things like that. There was a set called the 123, was for trawlers. I forget what the numbers were, the other ones. And the other one was for corvettes, and the next one was for destroyers, like Adam and the Adonis, you know, eventually. And that was the 126 set, that was the 126 set.
Now, what did you train on? What did you train on?
I was training them all. Systematically, you were trained. You were also trained on each set as they went, and you were assessed.
Now, could you describe how did the sets work? I mean, what sort of controls did they have for you? To use? Do you see what I mean? Because people don't know what an ASDIC set looks like at all.
Yes, I quite understand that. The 123 set was a primitive sort of set. You know, it had a compass. You see, which was the ordinary ordinary compass, you know, not the what kind of compass?
Not gyroscope, magnetic.
Not the gyro compass, that's right. In other words, Trollope had those, you see, and the next Corbett, of course, had the fucker, you know, compass, and the 126 was absolutely superb. Now, this was peculiar because my first ship was not a destroyer at all.
Now, hang on, keep to the set. Yeah. Now, how did you send the signal out? What switches, buttons? Do you see what I mean? Can you sort of recreate the set for me?
We sent a transmission out. You see, we transmitted the sound beam. Now, how did I do that? I must have pushed a button, I think. And I transmitted the sound beam. You see, and then of course you went for the echo back.
And you'd have headphones, would you?
Yes, you had headphones. Sorry, you had headphones. Yes, you were equipped with headphones. Each rating had a headphone, you see. And you transmit the sound beam on a bearing that you were given, you see. And bearing so-and-so, red 5-0 was it. And the bearing, the sound beam went under there. And then the echo came back within a certain time, you see, the echo came back at you. And you had to decipher whether that echo was higher or lower than the transmission sound beam, you know, that you sent out. If it was higher, the submarine was coming towards you. If it was lower, it was going away from you. So you had to interpret all this, you see. And as this, I think, was fascinating, because you were pitting your wits against the U-boat captain, weren't you? The U-boat captain was pitting his wits against you. And of course, your life depended on it.
Now, how did you practice on this in the school before we go out on
in the school, we were practicing on a double decker bus. That year, the officers were at the top assessing you, and you were underneath doing the.
How would you send out the signal, though?
Well, you had a.
No, I mean, where would the signal go? Because there wouldn't be any water, would there? Do you see what I mean?
Oh no, this was. How should I say? This was set up, you know, in a bus, you know, but it was set up for training. It was purely for training, this was set up. And it reproduced faithfully sea conditions, you know, it did. For instance, the officers, when they came down and said, oh, you missed that, you know, you didn't hit that U-boat, you know, you did hit it, or you did. Actually, I thought I was pretty efficient at, you know, and that must have been because I passed.
Now, you mentioned that you went out in two old ships, the Boarhound and the Bretwalda.
That's right.
Now, what were those trips like? Can you describe a typical trip?
They went out with several ratings, you know, and your rating was designated to do one attack on a U-boat. Now, the submarines that were resting, you know, used to go and do the Arctic training for the benefit of the Arctic training, you see, to train them.
So what would happen on one of these exercises?
Well, you were the Arctic rating on board those ships, you see, and you had to do what the Arctic training, you had to do the whole exercise, and then you were assessed when you got back to port, you see? You were assessed when you got back to port and told how you'd done, right? Sometimes that was fearsome, you know, you'd miss the U-boat or you'd hit it off, or so forth, you know, and it was very, very good because it was a very thorough training, and of course the results at the end were very, very good. You know, they could say exactly, they could show you. You all got together, the officers, and you got together then. The officers, training officers, all got together, and they showed you where you'd gone wrong or what you'd done well, you know. It was very, very good, I thought.
Was it a sort of thing you just picked? You, as you got more experience, you got better at it?
Yes. Okay.
Or was it a knack, you know, that some people could just do it straight away?
Yes, if I may jump ahead there, I became the action operator on board the Dunnet.
We'll come back to that. Yeah. Now, you mentioned...
You have to be lived up to, got up to. Yes.
Now, you mentioned you went out actually on submarines as well. What was the purpose of that?
I only did one trip on a submarine. Only one trip. You're only supposed to do one trip just to see what your U-boat crews were suffering when you took them. And I was allocated to a Dutch submarine, a free Dutch submarine, and you know, free Dutch submarine. And it had actually been built in Germany, and it was a U-boat. It was an actual U-boat, and the Free Dutch had pinched this U-boat and brought it over here, you see. So, and I didn't understand what the Dutch were saying on board the confounded thing, you know. They were talking in Dutch, you see, and I didn't understand what was going on. But I could see what was going on, and I think it was the most eerie experience I've ever had. So, I think it's the most eerie experience I've ever had, because I was in that U-boat, and the U-boat went and dived onto the bottom of the ocean. And as it was being detected, as the lads were going over the top, you know, on the Brett Waller, the bottom, I could hear them going over the top, you could hear the screws, you know, going over the top. And as they were going over the top, it was lying on the bottom, and it was going like this on the gravel, on the bottom of the ocean. I think it's supposed to be in...
Well, the U-boat was moving on the ground.
Yes, the U-boat.
Could they hear the Aztec sound beam? I mean, could you hear when it came past the ship? Yeah.
They would hear the hydrophones. On the hydrophone set, they would hear the Aztec pings as well. And they would hear the screws, of course.
But you wouldn't hear the Aztec pings from where you were, just
no,
on
no,
the submarine?
No, not just as one of the crew or a passenger, no.
And anything else about the time on the Dutch submarine?
And that Dutch submarine was peculiar because they were all Dutchmen speaking in Dutch, of course, and we were lost, you see. There were two or three of us on board, I forget which. You know, lads that were training like me. And I forget who they were, actually, but they were lads who were training like me. And we were lost, you see. We just wondered what was going on, but we could see what was going on. And I think those U-boats must have suffered an awful lot. Sometimes I wake in the middle of the night and I think, what the hell did you, George, what did you put those lads through? Because I write to a German U-boat survivor now. I must tell you this. A man called Horst Schober was a U-boat, he was one of the crew of a U-boat, and he went right through the war and survived. And he says, fantastic. We sometimes swap stories now when I see him. Yes.
Now, anything else about your training course on HMS, well, with HMS Nimrod Station?
No, that training course went superbly well.
Was there anything else you were learning other than, the Aztec machine? Were there any other machines you were introduced to? Or
the recording machine, the recording.
What was the recording machine?
The recording machine was a machine which you was by your set. And it was like a toilet roll, you know. And it had lines across it. And it had the plot of the U-boat that you were detecting. It's clearly marked on it, you know. And that was a tremendous asset, Because as you were doing the work, you looked across and see what was happening, you see. You could see the U-boat's track, you know. And that was very helpful.
Now
It was an iodized roll.
Now, how long were you on this course? You got there sort of late December 41, possibly January 42.
Yes.
And how long were you there for? Now, we've just been looking at, and you joined Nimrod on the late November 41 and left in the back end of January
42.
You were just at Drake for a week or two before that, which you don't remember, which is fair enough. Now, so in January you went to the Osprey, from the look of it. Now,
the other station is near Dunoon. That was where you were drafted from to sea, you see. That was your base.
And what was Osprey? That's HMS Osprey. It's another shore station, is it?
That's right. At Dunham, just off the further of the Clyde.
And what happened there? You weren't there that long. You were there from mid January, late January 42 to late March 42. Okay. Did anything much happen while you were at HMS Osprey?
No, you were just hanging about waiting there for ships. And I think my next ship was sent out to America to HMS Saker 2, wasn't it? Saker 2, that's right.
HMS Saker 2.
Saker 2 was a barracks in New York. There's a barracks, two large hotels, the Barclay and something else, hotels in New Jersey, that's where they were. And they were full of ratings about 6,000 ratings waiting for ships, you see, that the Americans were waiting for, and that sort of thing.
And that was known as Saker 2 Barracks.
That's right.
And was that in Asbury Park?
Yes, that's right.
Now, what do you remember of the voyage out there?
The voyage out there was on a ship called the Banfora.
The Banfora?
The Banfora, which was a Belgian prison ship. A Belgian prison ship. My God. Why did I pick them? And I got on board that thing. And it broke down the middle of the Atlantic and was doing one knot. One knot it was doing. I think I crawled into a lifeboat in case we got sunk. And that was me. But me and Ginger Taylor, that's called Ginger Taylor. And we were allocated to, from Asbury Park.
No, we haven't done Asbury Park yet. Well, now, what exactly was happening at Asbury Park? You were there?
Asbury Park, we were in rooms. We were in rooms. About six of us to a room. And we were just waiting for ships, doing nothing really. We wandered down to the dockyard and things like that, you know. But
Was this in a hotel?
In a hotel, yes. About six of us to a room. They were hotels that were commissioned by the American Navy, yes.
What were conditions like there? Because some people have said that it was quite luxurious compared to.
It was.
Can you talk a bit about that?
Life was very good. The Americans looked after it very well. And the hospitality from the civilian people was very, very good. They were asked out a lot.
What about the food in the hotel?
The food was excellent. It was served on trays, you know, and American style. And it was very, very good indeed. There were some things we didn't like, sweet corn and things like that we didn't like. But there are, the most of them were very wholesome, very, very good food indeed. And
now, you mentioned
we were fed on the American style. You see, so we were upped, you know, our standard was upped. The Americans fed better than us. And we were very, very privileged to be there.
Now, what about the hospitality of the Americans? How did that show itself?
Well, we got tickets to shows, you know, that we wanted to go to at night, you know, free tickets from the USO. The USO gave us tickets, and we were looked after as British sailors we were. I mean, we hadn't been to sea, but we were fitted, you know, as wonderful people. Because British Navy, they looked up to us, you know. I must say, they looked up to the British Navy. They really did. Limeys, they called us Limeys. And Limeys were, of course, their favourite phrase, because we've got lime juice, you know. We're from Limeys, you know, in the tropics in our old days. So we got Limeys, that was it. And I got to know a family there in New York called Dyson, actually. They were called them Dysons. Their son was an officer in the American Army, but the two older people, they're dead now. But those older people were Mark and Pa Dyson, you know, like our parents would have called them. And they were very good to us. For instance, when my first came to dinner, they would say, we're being rationed, you know, but you have a choice of lamb, beef, or pork, you know, that sort of thing, you know. And they fitted us very well. They had twin daughters as well. Laura and Lillian Dyson, they called them. Lillian Dyson fastened her stuff on me for some reason, being 20-year-old, you know, that was marvellous. And my mate, who was drafted with me, was called Billy Humes. He was a Salford bus driver, a bus conductor, and he was doing athletes as well. And we were assigned to a ship, you know, we were assigned to a ship eventually from there. I'm getting ahead of myself again here.
No, that's all right. Now, were you sent to any training courses while you were? Asbury Park's a suburb of New York, isn't
it?
Were you sent to any training courses?
No.
Now, did you realise why you were there and the background of the DEs?
We were there to man ships that were being allocated to us. The Americans were. My first ship, for instance, was an escort carrier, the Biker.